here in the United States and the First Nations in Canada. You will hear issues surrounding fishing, hunting, and gathering rights, environmental threats to land, water, and air, and we will listen and discuss music, language, and traditions. You can listen to Idle No More Indigenous Report on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you'd like to listen to Idle No More Indigenous Report live, you can listen 24/7 on the archive at prn.fm. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
PRN would like to thank its listeners for making us number one on Zeno Radio's phone service and also the top searched internet radio station on Google. Thank you for helping us move forward.
All the streetlights around me in the wall-to-wall prison of my city. Flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me.
Hello, everybody. It's Michael C. Rupert, KDS Tracker. I'm Tracker of Truth, and I'm with you this Sunday, the 14th of July, in the year 2013. And as we meet tonight in this nightclub at the end of the world, climate chaos is proceeding apace and with increasing intensity. I just saw a picture tonight taken from a fixed camera at the North Pole that I put was put up on my Facebook page. And from a fixed camera at the North Pole, you can see open water in some directions. We may well be without ice up there by the end of summer. Climate change is proceeding apace, floods, droughts, typhoons, earthquakes, volcanoes, all not letting up, increasing in intensity. And as we meet tonight, tyranny all over the world, a brutal fist of repression is standing forth naked in a great many places and soon to be seen much more clearly here. And brute force as the real lever behind the powers that be is becoming more and more obviously disrobed, standing naked with no clothes in the consciousness of the 3D world in which we live. So before I even waste any time talking tonight, before I even expend any time talking tonight, there's something you all need to listen to. And after you have listened to this, you might be able to hear better. So pay attention. Listen to this poem.
When Men Become Truly Free, a poem by Colin Ryan. There comes a time in the lives of men when the ruthless and the criminally insane who rule the masses for their own gain make the fatal mistake of enjoying too much their psychopathic entertainment and take too far their need to tread men down by destroying any sense of a secure life and taking away each and every freedom, stealing the last piece of wealth they possess so they cannot even care for their own. Stifling their voice with laws and corruption, beating them down with rule by force, where no justice exists for those being played, and there is no direction left for men to turn. When this insane game is taken this far, comes the time when men have nothing left to lose. This is the time when the minds of men are freed. It is the time when man loses his fear of death. This is the time when a man becomes invincible. He becomes free to do whatever he must do, without fear for his life or for his future. He will take control of the destiny of the world, away from the bloodied hands of the soulless. Any action he takes, he will take with a surety that he must do something, for he has no future. So the act he chooses will be all the greater. For when faced with oblivion and with no way out, he will take down as many of his oppressors with him, gladly die in a selfless act to change the world's future. This day is coming soon, as it always does. The perverse minds of evil always self-destruct, as their addiction to our suffering can never be sated. Exerting control for their paranoia and fear of men. For every good man will take down these brutes. Every free man will give himself up for his brothers. For a man with nothing left becomes fully empowered. And he is the most unassailable weapon.
Nothing left to lose. Warriors, all humans, all creatures fight best when they believe they are already dead. And when we have talked, and for what I have, the message that I have been trying to carry to you, especially over the last 3 or 4 months, is very clearly that. The power that we need to achieve the change in consciousness to find the 100th monkey will not make itself clear, available, and or accessible until we have reached that point. That was a poem called When Men Become Truly Free by Colin Ryan. It was read by Des Bertain. It's on YouTube. And I want to thank my dear friend Ognjen Petrov in Bulgaria, Sofia, Bulgaria, part of that amazing miracle that's happening there, for sending that, putting that up on my Facebook page this week. It's fun to collaborate with some of the really cool warriors I'm finding on the field these days. As we start tonight, Egypt is unsettled. What's clear about Egypt is that the bankers will remain in control one way or another. We will be left with a neoliberal financial establishment wedded to the IMF. That's for the moment the only thing that matters, whether in fact or not the powers that were will be able to maintain control of Egypt. But the fact is that the Egyptian people are very soon and now starting to, but very soon going to be starving completely, because they have to buy many billions of dollars worth of food each year to support, I think it's 58 million people. Or is it 85? I apologize. The largest population in the Arab world. They have to import a great deal of food. I wrote about that in my book, Confronting Collapse. It came out with the movie. And here is where the rubber meets the road. If you recall from the movie, I said, you can't eat money. Well, guess what? They can't print money. And the money that they print, the debt that they print, and the wealth that they extract is not going to produce enough food, let alone enough water for Egypt. But that is the place the whole world is getting into. Guy McPherson gave a great interview this week, and I keep close track. And he made it very clear that, we have until 2030, even if you don't factor in I don't know how many, the umpteen million positive feedback loops we're up to now. I think it's 13, 14, 15. I don't know. It'll be 20 soon. And we find more. They're all kicking in and acting ever more aggressively. And so even not counting those, the temperature increase, Cookden says that the human race is dead by 2030. That is 17 years. That's in the 3D world. That's in the world of our consciousness, the consciousness of which we're trapped and from which we're trying to escape right now. But what Guy made very clear is that, you know, it's not human being per se. We might be able to live in a world that was 3, 4, 5, 6 degrees centigrade warmer. To some degree, we would evolve enough, would survive. However, the plants cannot evolve fast enough, nor can the 250 species a day that are going extinct. But the plants and the oxygen producers, in the ocean and in the Brazilian rainforest cannot adapt beyond, you know, 2-3 degrees. That's why the extinction events are certainties, at least from this plane of existence, on this state of consciousness. So we're all going to be hungry very soon, and we are starting to see signs of that all over the world right now. So I want you to sit now and hold in your consciousness what you just heard, and I want you to understand that it is not people's lives in Egypt that are in danger. It is not people's lives in Brazil that are in danger. It is not indigenous tribes, people in the rainforest who are watching their lands be destroyed and who are being evicted, whose lives are in danger. It is your life that is in danger. Now let's talk a little bit for a moment about Fukushima, or Fukushima, as I've heard it pronounced from some Japanese tourists I met. It's getting horribly out of control. The amount of radioactive water. Well, we will cover that, but bear this in mind first about where Fukushima is right now. The first thing to know about the danger from the radioactive mass remaining on site in the three reactors that melted at Fukushima is that nobody knows, and I'm reading from a post that Leonard Lynn put on my Facebook page this week, that nobody knows how much radioactive material there is. Nobody knows how much uranium and plutonium it contains. Nobody knows how to make it safe. So no one knows how great the continuing danger is. Now, your people have talked about diverting that stuff to weapons use. It's not a problem at the moment, since the level of radioactivity is so high it kills anyone who comes close to it. I will add that it disables any machine that comes close to it, robot, which is why it hasn't been moved. On the other hand, it's necessary to move it in order to measure it, even know what's there. And it, even if it was movable now, the technology to measure it, get this, does not yet exist. Global research organization founded by my friend Michel Chelsadovsky, who has done such good work, he's been a guest on this show, had an article up this week, which I'm loading now. It's a little slow. Fukushima 2013, remaining radioactive mass, dangerous leaking radioactive water, all four reactors are getting worse. The first thing to know in this story dated July 11th, about the danger from the radioactive mass remaining on site in the three reactors that melted down at Fukushima is that nobody knows how much radioactive material there is. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. That was from his story that I was quoting. And the radioactive water, excuse me, I just sneezed, but that's one of those things you can't help. Live radio. Bless me. This is from Nation of Change today. This is another article on Fukushima. Bad as the situation is at Fukushima, it's gotten worse. Perhaps you've heard that radiation levels of the water leaving the Fukushima, Japan nuclear power plant and flowing into the Pacific Ocean have risen by roughly 9,000%. Turns out that's probably putting a good face on it. This is from an article dated today at nationofchange.org. These are the highest radiation levels measured at Fukushima since March 2001, when an earthquake-triggered tsunami destroyed the plant's four reactors, three of which melted down. By official measurement, the water coming out of Fukushima is currently 90,000 times more radioactive than officially safe drinking water. Okay, do you still think it's someone else's life who's in danger? Do you still think it's someone else? Here's a quote. This is my dear friend Aeroflora, who I haven't seen since I moved away from Sebastopol almost a year ago, posted something beautiful on my site this week. And this is from a book that I'm reading again and reading now for the first time. I've never discovered the book, but the book is called The Manual of the Warrior of Light. We're talking about warriorhood now, because at some point what we're trying to impress on you is we will all decide to become heroes, and that's the point at which we win. But this quote says, although I have been through all that I have, I do not regret the many hardships I've met, because it was they who brought me to a place I wish to reach. Now all I have is this sword, and I give it to whomever wishes to continue his pilgrimage. I carry with me the marks and scars of battles. They are the witnesses of what I suffered and the rewards of what I conquered. These are the beloved marks and scars that will open the gates of paradise to me. There was a time when I used to listen to tales of bravery. There was a time when I lived only because I needed to live. But now I live because I am a warrior, and because I wish one day to be in the company of him for whom I have fought so hard. Great mystery. That's a great book, and I'm finding it's kind of reading like a memoir, actually. I'm not through with it yet, but it's something I'm going to be reading a lot. And I play that in there because we are at a place now where we are, I think, beginning to come to grips with. We see this massive, and I'm going to talk about this more later, uprising, if you will, of Latin American leaders, and it has to continue. The presidents of Bolivia, Ecuador, Argentina, Venezuela, and of course Nicaragua, they're all stepping up around Mr. Edward Snowden, and we'll spend some time with him tonight, trust me. And they are threatening they're going to recall ambassadors from Europe over the plane grounding. They've offered asylum. They're standing up. They're uniting. We hope that continues. We hope it's not bluster, because this battle must be joined now. But what I'm praying that I am seeing and hoping that I am seeing is a real gut level emerging awareness of the fact that we are all connected everywhere to everything. There is no them, there is no us, there is no getting from somebody else, because it's all one. There is no so, and herein comes the empowerment. And maybe we've talked about getting on the same page in terms of triggering this awakening of consciousness. Maybe the same page we will all have to get on is we're all going to die any second unless we do something. I hope we find a page that comes before something that late in the book. But there is no separation, which is a really good setup for our first song tonight. New White Trash is Doug Lewis, me, Kristen Vigard, a whole bunch of really cool people. Chris Vigard was the original Annie on Broadway. She was in the original cast, the Broadway cast of Hair, no less. She's an amazing singer and a legend who carries an enormous amount of musical history. We have not been ignoring her. Some of her songs, which are just amazing, I want to play one right now, weren't finally mixed and mastered by Bob Rice in L.A. We didn't get them back until just recently. So I've not been ignoring Chris, and you're going to find out in a minute how good a singer she is. I was here in the house with her one day this winter when we were writing and recording, and I watched her write three incredible songs in one day. She was just on fire. And in this particular song, which I just loved to pieces, all by herself, the Queen of Harmony makes the Andrews sisters look shameful. So this is from our album, Age of Authority, New White Trash, newwhitetrash.com. Welcome, and please listen to a song written and performed by our bandmate, Miss Kristen Vigard. It's called Between You and Me.
The line is drawn, and here we are on either side. of the one and only thing. The line is drawn, and here we are on either side. Your bet here, right down the line. Love is in your head and in your heartbeat. The line is drawn.
Chris Vigard knocked that one out of the park. I love that song. I find that running in my head a lot. Hey, it's a good album. It's called Age of Authority. It's by my band, our band, New White Trash, at newwhitetrash.com. It's for sale now, and we've been making sales. We've almost got enough pre-orders to actually make the physical CDs, but you can download all 16 songs for $11.11, get a CD for $22.22. And a sponsor's edition for $55.55, which with all kinds of artwork and stuff, and really cool, and makes you producer on our next album, newwhitetrash.com. It's a good album. Spirit, the Muse, really worked well. It's some good music, so help us out. That certainly gives us energy. So that's first song tonight here at our nightclub at the end of the world. Hey, Al-Qaeda forces in Syria killed the Free Syrian Army commander. What? Dot, dot, dot. What? Hold it. What? Okay, wait a minute. All these guys were supposed to be fighting beside each other, the Al-Qaeda and the Syrian Army commander, Free Syrian Army commander, against Bashar al-Assad. But, you know, things have happened suddenly, and now this coalition of so-called freedom fighters, God, this is such a horrible black comedy. This is ridiculous. So it looks like all these rebels that Barack the Bloody, Barack the Brutal, Barack the Butcher is trying to support to overthrow Assad so that he can launch the attack on Iran, the maniac. This play is not going according to schedule, and so I posted on Facebook. I believe the Syrian campaign is either being abandoned or seriously modified, and I told you. But thanks to the courage of the people in Turkey and the courage of the people in Egypt, Syria is off the table. That attack and the ultimate confrontation with Iran is what's inevitable to control the world's remaining energy supplies. And infinite growth is nothing without energy and resources. How many times have we been through this? Now, remember, the people in Egypt are going to starve because world food supplies are dwindling very, very rapidly, and IMF money and debt is not going to make food. It is not going to make water. This is where the pyramid scheme comes crashing down. And yes, my friends, we are indeed living in a very corrupt Babylon that's going to get very nasty, but it's also going to collapse. So, you know, here we have Fukushima going crazy and the largest floods in Egyptian, Indian history for the last 50 years. Tens of hundreds of thousands homeless, several thousand dead. We have the heat waves continuing, and we'll get to some more of this. I'm just reminding you where you were when that poem ended at the very beginning of the show. So I see this happening. Now let's talk about Latin America for a little bit. We got a couple of minutes before a break. We will continue that after the break too, because this is a good strong theme. Bolivian President Evo Morales threatened Thursday. He said, "I'm going to shut down the embassy in Bolivia. We don't need no stinking embassy." After his plane was hijacked, forced down, air piracy, whatever you want to call it. It was an absolute ridiculous, brutal, brute force and stupid backfiring smackdown by the United States of America. And it's having major repercussions throughout Latin America. 7, 8, 9 countries now have stood up and said, wait a minute, that's bullshit, because, you know, you can only push people so far, and Latin America is an extremely special place. Morales, when he made the statement, was flanked by Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela, presidents of Ecuador, Argentina, Korea, and I believe it's Kirchner still in Argentina and Uruguay, as he announced the possible embassy closure. Also, these nations have announced that they're probably going to recall their ambassadors to Europe over this. Now, this is serious. Remember, Latin America is not isolated. Latin America can see what is happening in Turkey. Latin America can see what is happening in Egypt. Latin America can also, obviously, most certainly see what is happening in Brazil and in Chile and other places where there are massive demonstrations. And there is a tide, a surge forming. There's a lot of repercussions still to come from Snowden, Mr. Snowden. And this game is far from over. But as this simmers, a moment that I've been waiting for seems to be approaching. I'm not going to declare victory. It'll be here when I see the whole world actually stand up and just really start kicking the United States' ass, which is exactly what needs to happen. Right now, I'm sorry, the United States needs to get knocked on its butt just to slow it down, because it's an out-of-control, dangerous fascist tyranny now. Of course, we know that Uncle Sam's going to come home and beat up on us soon, but that's a separate thing. Let's continue. Morales said Bolivia is not your colony. Now, historically, of course, I know, and it's very clear that the United States, especially the Rockefeller family, has invested in enormous amounts of time and money. This was the backyard. And the levels and dimensions of brutality and oppression that have been exercised throughout South America, Latin America, for 100-plus years, are more than that, are hard to fathom. I really recommend a book called Thy Will Be Done, Nelson Rockefeller and Evangelism in the Age of Oil, something like that, written by Gerard Colby. Thy Will Be Done. It's the book that I model Crossing the Rubicon on. And if you want to read a book that gives you a history of South America that will make you shudder, I heartily recommend that book. So what I am watching and seeing here as we come to station break is what I perceive as the beginnings of a long hoped for, from my heart, Latin American revolt against the imperial power of the United States of America. I pray that it's underway. It needs to be underway, and that's where we're going to pick up with this theme of being in a place where you're going to die, and that's when you become invincible. We will pick that up when we come back after these messages. I'm Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour here with you on the Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back. my club at the end of the world. We're on a little roll tonight. The theme that we had when we went to break was Latin America. And I've written a lot about Latin America. I did it From the Wilderness. I did it Crossing the Rubicon. And, of course, you know that I've been there. I lived in Caracas, Venezuela for 4 months in 2006 while we were fighting to keep the Pat Tillman series going, and we know how that turned out. And I've visitado México muchas veces y la República Dominica, and I have a very strong and deep affection for the region. And I see South America, and Guy McPherson would agree with me in terms of climate change, because the Northern Hemisphere gets hit much harder, much more quickly with the impacts of climate chaos than the Southern Hemisphere does. But I want to make this clear about Latin America, because I'm really tired of hearing this question, and I started answering this question perhaps in 2002, 2003. Where's the best place to move to? And so I want to tell anybody right now who says, well, where should I go in Latin America? I would say don't, because you're fools right now. What has become clear to me as a result of my own experience in Latin America, which was, in many ways different, is that if you're just thinking in terms of a place you can go that has food, water, you're going there to a place where you can take rather than give. Your mentality is going to where you can survive. You are not part of any community. And what if there's any lesson I have learned over my long odyssey, warning about and preparing for and experiencing now collapse, is that it really doesn't matter where you are. If you're not in a tribe, you're fucked. Period. If you don't have a community where you belong and people you can work with and cooperate with, people who act tribally as a family to take care of you, if you just pick up and move someplace, I would be, first of all, offended, and you wouldn't be of any assistance. Maybe you're a gringo, you can bring some money, but guess what? Money is not meaning much anymore. That's why I don't watch the financial shit anymore at all. It's irrelevant now. So I'm not recommending that anybody move to Latin America. What I'm recommending is that all Latin Americans be Latin Americans and put some fire in it, my brothers and sisters. You just do what you do, and in doing that, and I say this to every president of every Latin American country, you stand up now and you be Latin Americans and you protect your land and you protect your people. And in doing that, you will be serving all 7 billion of us. So I pray that this standing up, which I have written about and hoped for so long, with a united front, a united Bolivarian front, against the U.S. empire, I pray that this gets bigger and stronger and harder and faster. Prefiero morir como humano libre que como ganado. Hope I said that right. And what I said was, I would much rather die as a free human than as cattle. And go back to the poem at the beginning of the show. We're not slaves, we're cattle. That's lower than slaves. George Orwell was right. We have been farmed, we have been husbanded, we have been imprisoned, and we are now being murdered. So we are, we haven't been slaves. On your knees, we're being slaughtered. And if I'm going to die, I want to die as a free human, a free man. And I know that this resonates throughout the soul of every Latin American, as it does every human, but I have been exposed enough to the culture, to the language, to the people, and I just, I would so much like to visit some places again. Okay, that I understand that this must resonate, as it must resonate in all of us. And in order to get 7 billion of us on one page, if we apply the 100th monkey effect, it may only be necessary to get 50, 60, 70 million of us on the same page singing the same note before that becomes the tuning note of a new frequency. And for all you people who might still think that there's some place that's different, if you go to Lac Mégantic in Quebec, more than 70 people were incinerated by this horrible train wreck. 6.5 million liters of crude oil spilled as a result of that train car collision. And in comparison, the 2013 ExxonMobil pipeline oil spill in Mayflower, Arkansas, which was horrible. It's still, the repercussions are still, but they, of course, they get passed over, forgotten. Well, let's compare it. That spill, which was horrible in Mayflower, Arkansas, spilled an estimated 893,000 liters of oil, as opposed to 6.5 million in Quebec. Now, I really want to spank all of the media who wrote that this was crude oil. This was not crude oil. This was shale. This was bitumen. This was tar sands oil. Now, as this species, as the powers that enslave us and are determined to extract every last bit of profit and wealth out of everything before they kill everything, as we are pursuing or trying to sustain this deadly beast called industrial civilization, we are taking more and greater risks, and we are causing more and more environmental damage and destruction, adding and creating more feedback loops in our desperation to obtain energy, and in the powers that were's delusion that they can keep us blind to what is so obviously happening around us. But that's a horrible tragedy in Ontario. But now here's something really, really, really offensive. Common Dreams put up a good story this week, and it has to do with Chevron. And you're going to love this. In chilling ruling, Chevron granted access to activists' private internet data. Sweeping subpoena violates rights of those who spoke out against oil giants' devastating actions in Ecuador. Huge, brutal stuff that happened in Ecuador. But Chevron is suing the activists. Look, I'll just have to read this. You won't believe it otherwise. The U.S. government is not the only entity who, with judicial approval, is amassing massive amounts of personal information against their so-called enemies. A federal judge has ruled to allow Chevron, through a subpoena to Microsoft, to collect the IP usage records and identity information for email accounts owned by over 100 environmental activists, journalists, and attorneys. The oil giant is demanding the records in an attempt to cull together a lawsuit which alleges that the company was the victim of a conspiracy. Pardon me? Chevron, the victim of a conspiracy? In the $18.2 billion judgment against it for dumping 18.5 billion gallons of oil waste in the Ecuadorian Amazon, causing untold damage to the rainforest. Chevron is going to sue. You get that? And they want all. Now, if Chevron wins that case, of course, that'll be many years. Of course, no, it may be many days now with the, you know, we don't live in a system of courts or laws anymore. It's they do whatever the fuck they want to when they want to. But if Chevron were to win that, that might trigger some real outrage. One wonders where the outrage is. One wonders where it's coming. Well, it's maybe closer to the surface than we realize. We won't know until we find out. But can you picture being any more grossly insulted than that? Chevron portraying itself as the victim of a conspiracy by us who simply want to stay alive, and wanting to sue us for wanting to stay alive? How crazy does it have to get? Well, you will know when you understand, again, one more time, that this is all of our lives right now. It's all on the line. Nothing's going to get any better. There's no more time to bail anything out. There are signs that we are looking, searching for a common page together to stop this madness. And I see amazing leadership coming out of Latin America, and I would so love to visit Mexico again. We're going to talk about Mexico at the end of the show. But now I think it's time for another song from Age of Authority and New White Trash. This is one of several that I had a large part in writing, and I sing a large part of this song. Some great backups in here and some great sentiment. Doug Lewis wrote a book. Big chunk of this. And Doug is just the everything for this band. Yeah, there is no song that doesn't have Doug Lewis all over it and through it. But this is a song that that also kind of fits right now. You'll hear me singing it. It's called Long Cold Winter. Here we go.
Sky silver at dawn contains too many chemical trails in the autumn. And like that old Italian saying says, everything all goes to the shopping malls, Santa Claus, and Bankorama. Now Sitting Bull is sitting away out on a range, waiting on a change to come, and rearrange he'll wait forever. It's gone. And chains which he will moan begin to blow. And the warriors have the pain. Are they sturdy in the saddles? Riding into battle, the master hide their faces. Pain is rolling in his old bones, closely by the fire with Jefferson at home in old Virginia. My seven sisters hear how the night dives in, and it's getting late, no dawn in sight again. It's gonna be a long
That was Long Cold Winter from Age of Authority, New White Trash's new album. You can find it at newwhitetrash.com. You can listen for free, download them all for $11.11, get a hard CD for $22.22, or become a sponsor, get this, get a really upgraded, beautiful, artsy, handcrafted thing for $55.55. That'll make you a producer on our next, we're optimistic, album CD project after this. Hey, listen, there was a great article this week, if you don't think you're connected, on the World Socialist website, but it was a great story that people living in caves in the United Kingdom, as UK homelessness reaches a five-year high, people are moving into caves. Boy, there's some poetry there. Go back and live in – well, you know what? I'm starting to like this. And I made a post this week on my Facebook page, and I want to emphasize it here, that if everybody wants my best advice on what to do now, and boy, there's some slow campers that have just shown up, just starting to show up. But for those of you who have been faster campers for a while, here's my piece of advice on the one thing you can do right now that would be most helpful to you, given the state of affairs in the world. I would go to Tom Brown Jr.'s Tracker School, or find a good wilderness survival school. When I went to Tom's basic course, that was back in early 11, I had such a good time, and Tom and his instructors were so amazing. But even then, I was a little skeptical and didn't get it and didn't listen. When Tom says, you need to be able to live in a way that you plan on not living in the same place for any more than 2 or 3 days at a time, and being able to move and adjust and adapt with that. And as we are seeing the world's first climate refugees, I would call them, well, environmental refugees now encompasses the toxic poisons, maybe not as a result of climate change, but I would say we're seeing environmental refugees appearing all over the planet. Inuit people in Alaska are losing the ice, and they are having to leave because their lands are no longer tenable. There are some people in the South Pacific whose islands are sinking underwater. They're going to have to move. But, you know, I just made really good friends with somebody who's visiting, my friend Jesse Ray from Asheville, North Carolina. Her name is Jade. And she's moving because she has to get away from the rain. In case you haven't noticed, there's a torrential rainfall throughout certain parts, and as a result of the elongated, if you will, jet stream currents that are dropping the wet lower and higher, bringing the heat further north and really throwing things off. I remember Guy McPherson on the radio talking about that. The heat wave got so intense that it killed citrus trees that had been alive for 100 years in southern Arizona. The point being that plants cannot adapt that quickly. So we have environmental refugees everywhere, everywhere, and getting worse. The flooding in India is truly horrific. But now it's time for something encouraging as we get down to the last few minutes of the show. My good friend Celeste Lawrence posted a great photo. There's a writer, a journalist named Jenna Pope. Pardon me, I needed some water. Has gone back to Turkey. Now, remember, Turkey, Taksim, Gezi Park, all those brave people. And she's reported from there. With a great picture. It's still going on there. They're still rolling in the water cannons, and the people are still standing up. The park's been sealed off, but there are demonstrations. The people have not given up. But this was a comment that went up, and I want to talk about this because it's really significant. Thousands of protesters standing behind makeshift barricades in İstiklal Street in Istanbul earlier tonight as tear gas lingers overhead. Cops had cleared Gezi. And Celeste Lawrence wrote up that the link didn't share the whole post from Jenna Pope. But this is what Jenna Pope said in her post. And this is, and I feel this is true. Last night, I met many Turkish activists who have been involved in the protests here. One thing I kept hearing them say was how many people have become fearless throughout the protests. Before Occupy Gezi, whenever a water cannon truck would come out during a protest, many people would become too scared and would leave. Now they build barricades and stand their ground while facing water cannons, tear gas, rubber bullets, and police batons. As I look deeper into this, what I see and what I feel and what's happening is that the occupiers, and I honor that name and I honor that tradition, I was there, have chosen or now prefer to live in a way that they're crashing on somebody's pad one night, they're sleeping in parks, they're sleeping in tents, they're moving, but they are not viewing that as temporary, they're viewing that as permanent, and they're finding joy in that, they're finding spirit in that, they're finding a quality of life in that, which for most of you doesn't exist. And that's the truth. And I celebrate that. I celebrate that freedom. I celebrate their evolution, become les misérables, you know, more than that. But understanding, pardon me, my throat's really dry. But understanding that there's no other place to go. And these are people who are choosing to die, if necessary, as free humans rather than as cattle. And don't let any reductionist ever get you beyond that. Now, I got about a minute left, and I said I was going to talk about Snowden. Look, Snowden ain't done yet. I got a minute left before we have to play something else. Snowden is far from over. There's more to happen. It's a huge drama. But if Snowden wanted to get to Venezuela, the easiest way in the world, and the CIA chief in Cancun, station chief, would absolutely know this, there's a nonstop Aeroflot from Vladivostok to Cancun. It doesn't overfly any country's airspace. You can almost swim from Cancun to Venezuela or Cuba. Again, no airspace involved there either. So the CIA will be sitting there with their facial recognition technology, all their computers, all their spies, waiting for Snowden to come to the Cancun airport because that's the most direct way to do it. The U.S. will not shoot down or interfere with a Russian flight. But wherever Edward Snowden turns up, however he gets there, it's going to be a big mystery. But in the meantime, his existence is a bleeding open wound to the Obama administration. As I say that now, we're about out of time because I'm going to play something for you, and I'm not going to say anything else. I'm going to leave you with this, and it's where we started. But I guarantee you it's going to sound different tonight. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I'll be back with you next week here on the Lifeboat Hour. Now listen to this poem again and see if it resonates a little better. Good night.
When men become truly free, a poem by Colin Ryan. There comes a time in the lives of men when the ruthless and the criminally insane who rule the masses for their own gain make the fatal mistake of enjoying too much their psychopathic entertainment. And take too far their need to tread men down by destroying any sense of a secure life and taking away each and every freedom, stealing the last piece of wealth they possess so they cannot even care for their own, stifling their voice with laws and corruption, beating them down with rule by force, where no justice exists for those being played, and there is no direction left for men to turn. When this insane game is taken this far, comes the time when men have nothing left to lose. This is the time when the minds of men are freed. It is a time when man loses his fear of death. This is the time when a man becomes invincible. He becomes free to do whatever he must do, without fear for his life or for his future. He will take control of the destiny of the world, away from the bloodied hands of the soulless. Any action he takes, he will take with a surety that he must do something, for he has no future. So the act he chooses will be all the greater. For when faced with oblivion and with no way out, he will take down as many of his oppressors with him, gladly die in a selfless act to change the world's future. This day is coming soon, as it always does. The perverse minds of evil always self-destruct, as their addiction to our suffering can never be sated. Exerting control for their paranoia and fear of men. For every good man will take down these brutes. Every free man will give himself up for his brothers. For a man with nothing left becomes fully empowered. And he is the most unassailable weapon.
Crackle, crackle, pop, pop.